voice in the back of my mind points out. He's gone, no matter what you think you're seeing. I wonder if it's like Master Simbri says, that our spirits travel on to whatever comes next, the place beyond the Deadlands, where all spirits eventually go. But for all I know, Evander blinked out of existence when the shade sliced through him. The shadow of Evander on the bed flickers again and disappears. A low groan escapes my throat. You know what else isn't fair about all this? I say, my voice hollow in the empty room. You left Carthia without me, right after you decided to stay. And I can never follow, on foot or by ship. I run my hands through my hair, clawing at my scalp, trying to silence the wretched voice in my mind that keeps getting louder. For the rest of my life, I could journey into the unknown world, small or vast or whatever it may be, and not find a trace of Evander anywhere but in my head. But the only place I want to go now is the Deadlands, where I like walking the paths, where I have unfinished business. And here's what hurts worst of all, I whisper to the empty bed, where just nights ago, Evander kissed me until our lips were warm and swollen. You'll never hear any of this, because you've vanished, and I have to carry on alone, without my best friend, without half of my heart. I wish you could tell me where to go from here, Evander. I slump in the chair. My head feels too heavy to be supported by my body any longer. Or how to get my heart to stop repeating your name. I touch the two gold pins on my worn black tunic. Two sets of Vaya's blue eyes. The eyes of death immortalized in sapphires. My own necromancer's pin, and Evander's. I can't remember who gave it to me, but I'm never taking his pin off so long as I wear mine. Everything I do is for both of us now. Chapter 10. The night of Evander's funeral, as those finished paying their respects are leaving the graveyard for Lyda's manor, I climb to the highest point in Grinweir City. Partly because I can't stand the thought of ever setting foot in the Crowthers' home again, even to collect the few belongings from my drawer. And partly because the steep walk reminds me of how much Evander loved to hike. Besides, I can't go back to my palace room to sleep. Not until Daniel delivers more of the bittersweet potions that lull me into a dreamless haze where I float for hours, high above the nightmare's grasping fingers. Sometimes watched over by that silent shadow of Evander that only seems to appear when there's potion in my veins. Fastening my cloak tighter to guard against the bitter night's wind, I sweep left out of the graveyard's main gate, away from the fading murmurs and sobs of the mourners. There's a single hill that peaks up above the palace and offers a bird's-eye view of the sea and the entire city, and that's where I'm headed. King Wilding hates the unnamed hill, because he doesn't believe anything should be taller or more imposing than his family's ruling seat. I'm not sure I like it either. It makes me think nature wanted to remind the king that there will always be some things outside his control, just as some things are maddeningly outside mine. Jax and Simeon follow me up the hill at a distance, trailed by Daniel, who's still in his healer's whites and who gasps for breath like he's never hiked before. He comes from the flattest part of Osley, where there aren't many hills to speak of. Behind Daniel, so far down the path that the babble of their voices is barely noticeable, Casmira and her crew make a slow ascent to join us. I was surprised to see them at the funeral, as I never got the impression any of them were close with Evander. But Casmira, who sat right beside me despite a lot of grumbling and muttering from the nobles, tugged a lock of my hair and whispered, "It's not the dead we came for, lovey." The moment I reached the top of the hill, I sank down on the flat, worn boulder Evander used to claim as a seat whenever we came up here, and stare at the starry sky. Jax sits far apart from the rest of us, his back rigid and his expression unreadable. He'd known Evander even longer than I did. I roll onto my side, the boulder digging into my ribs, to watch Casmira and her crew make a bonfire on the middle of the hilltop. A tall, stately woman named Devorah drops an armful of kindling in the space the men have cleared, and Casmira pulls out a piece of flint and a dagger to create the first spark of flame. "Master Simri should be here." Simeon watches the kindling catch fire, his face as lean and hollow as an elf's in a children's tale. Daniel puts an arm around Simeon's shoulders and draws his sandy-haired lover against his side. "I'm sure she's remembering Evander in her own way tonight," he murmurs. "I went to give her something for her headache earlier, and..." His voice grows so soft, I have to strain my ears to catch the last words. "She feels like his death is her fault."
"It's no one's fault."
Simeon hides his face in his hands, a gesture that makes my heart ache even more. I understand how Master Simbri is feeling. I keep thinking, if I'd just let him go into the ravine first, the shade would have grabbed me instead. Evander would have had time to flee, or maybe even fight. After all, he's the better swordsman. Or was. I wipe the wetness from my cheeks and lick the salt from my lips, surprised I haven't cried my eyes dry in the last several days. The potion must be wearing off.
"Guess this means you won't be returning to the Deadlands anytime soon."
One of Casmira's crew, a burly mate whose name I can't remember, draws my attention as he plunks himself down opposite Simeon and Daniel.
"Maybe,"
Jax grunts without looking toward the fire. He still hasn't moved from his spot on the far side of the hill, where he's no more than a solid outline in the dark. Simeon glances toward his partner, his brows raised, but Jax says nothing more. "There's still the matter of hunting the giant shade." His face is barely recognizable without his usual good-natured grin. "It'll have to be stopped, and I expect King Wilding will order Jax and me to take care of it, since he knows us best. I won't agree if he expects us to go at it alone, though." He twists one of the gold rings on his fingers, seeming lost in thought. A few moments later, he adds, 20 of his best archers and several vials of liquid fire potion to light their arrows ought to be enough." Daniel presses his lips together and shakes his head. Though he doesn't say anything, there's a storm brewing in his coal-rimmed eyes. Simeon is definitely in for a long night of arguing. I wish I could save them the trouble and heartache. But if they knew about my plans to go into the Deadlands and kill the Shade myself or die trying, they'd probably lock me in a room for all eternity and say it was for my own good. So I'll keep my silence until I leave. just as soon as I stop taking these calming potions and have my wits about me. Because when I return to the Deadlands, I need to make sure I stay alive long enough to watch the monster die. Sparrow! Hasmira's voice cuts into my thoughts, making me wince. Her lips are pursed. When I meet her eyes, she gestures to the fire and asks, "Why don't you say a few words?" I stagger to my feet and take an unsteady step toward the fire. My throat is too tight to allow any words to come out. But I pull a crumpled piece of parchment from my back pocket. A map of Grenrir Province. One Evander had been working on practically since we met, detailing all our favorite places. I clench my hand around the parchment until it's little more than a tiny wrinkled ball and toss it into the flames. Then fall to my knees in the grass as Evander's dreams rise into the night sky on puffs of smoke, vanishing like the rest of him. No one speaks again for a long while. Kasmira passes around a flask, but it's too much effort to raise my hand to take it. Eventually, she and the crew make their way back to the paradise, and Simeon douses the fire before he and Daniel stumble down the hill to bed. I sit in the cold grass, watching smoke from the fire's ashes curl into the velvet black sky, until Jax climbs to his feet and offers me a hand. "Coming?" I nod, but push myself to my feet without his help. We trudge back to the palace as the sky lightens to a misty gray. And when faced with the choice of returning to my dark, empty room, or following Jax into his, it doesn't take long to decide.
"Sorry about the, mess."
Jax kicks his spare cloak out of the narrow entryway. There's another pile of clothes on his bed, unwashed by the sharp, spicy scent of them, that he shoves aside to make a place for me to sit. Two lanterns flicker to life. Then Jax grabs the wooden chair from his desk and sinks into it, facing the bed. Hugging my knees to my chest and pushing my back against the wall, I try to get comfortable on the lumpy mattress. The lanterns don't shine bright enough to illuminate the far corners of the room, which is just as well because it looks like Jax keeps his life's belongings stashed in careless heaps. I blink, realizing I can't remember the last time I was in here. Feeling Jax's gaze on me, I clear my throat and point to the wardrobe at the back of the room. "You know, they gave you that so you could put your things inside it." He runs a hand through his raven hair, then shrugs.
"Sorry."
Reaching out with his foot, he kicks a dagger under the bed.
"It's not usually this bad, I..."
He swallows, and I brace myself for the sting of hearing Evander's name.
"Well, you know."
My shoulders slump in relief. I follow Jax's gaze to the stretch of wall beside the desk and suck in a breath at the number of holes punched there. Sure enough, when I peer at his right fist, his knuckles are raw. Shivering, I climb to my feet. I shouldn't be here, intruding on his grief. There's nothing I can offer Jax, even though he's been my friend almost my whole life. I'm all out of sympathy, and the last thing he needs is the added weight of someone else's sorrow. As I stride to the door, Jax hurries after me and puts a hand on my arm, gazing down at me from barely an inch away. His breath is hot on my chilled face.
"You just got here."
"That's right. And now I'm going." I tug my arm from his grasp. "Good night, Jax." My hand is on the door when he says roughly,
Odessa, wait.
I turn, and he drops his arms to his sides. I've never seen him like this, standing with his head bowed, his whole body shivering slightly as he struggles to raise his eyes to mine, looking like I could wound him with a single word. After a long and heavy moment of silence, he murmurs,
I miss him too.
I know. I have a strange urge to brush his hair out of his face. And maybe it's the soothing potion wearing off, but I'm shaking as I reach up. My hand gets lost on the way to his hair, sliding over the roughness of his cheek and cupping the back of his neck. We stare at each other, frozen like that until I find my voice. I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong with
the same thing that's wrong with me.
He growls as he grabs me by the waist and pulls me against him. Together, we fall onto the bed. He searches for my lips for a hopeful moment, nuzzling my neck. But I shake my head even as I cling to him. He wraps his arms around me, clutching me against his chest as he clumsily strokes my hair with his bloodied hand. We douse the torchlight, and Jax groans a little as I turn and press my back against his chest.
No,
I whisper, as his straying fingers curl around the hem of my snug tunic. He returns his hands to holding me. This isn't love. I know this. But in Jax's arms, I don't feel completely alone. I can breathe better with his weight pressing against my back, with my legs twined around his, our hot skin separated only by the thin layer of our necromancer's uniforms. I wrap my body in his copper skin stretched over hard muscle, wearing him like a shield against the rest of the world. And it makes the thought of living bearable again. This isn't love. This is just two people, shaking and sobbing together in the semi-dark, breathing hard in each other's ears as we try to forget our worst nightmares. This is survival. I'm not sure how I got back to my room last night. All I know is that the noon sun hurts my eyes. And Princess Valoria looks like a fiery spirit silhouetted against the merciless blaze. Get up, she says cheerily, like she's talking to a child or a puppy. She pulls back my blankets and wrinkles her nose. What's that awful smell? Oh, Sparrow, that's it. You're coming with me. She gives my hand a firm tug. I bolt upright. Suck in a breath, and wrap the sheets around me like a cloak to hide my nakedness, before I realize I'm still wearing my uniform. What are you doing here? I demand groggily, running a hand through my tangled hair and getting my fingers stuck halfway down. Valoria frowns, her doe brown eyes shining behind her glasses. I came to see how you were faring. And as it seems, you're in dire need of a bath. I'm here to escort you to the bathing house. You can use my private chamber, even. Thanks. I flop back down on the bed and pull the quilt over my head. But no. You can't stay in here forever, Odessa, Valoria says gently. When my father died, I thought I'd hide away for good. But everyone needs to eat and sleep and, she pauses to cough, bathe once in a while. It gets easier as the days pass. You'll see. One morning after he was gone, I realized the sun was still shining without him. And since I was still here, I figured I'd make myself useful to other Carthians who were missing a leg like he was. That's how I started working on my first invention. I shake my head under the quilt. Her words make my stomach churn. So I poke an arm out of bed to feel around for the latest vial of potion Daniel left me. But Valoria grabs my hand and gives it a firm tug, surprising me again with her strength.
Just go, please.
I roll over, putting my back to the princess. There's nothing you can do, Valoria. I'm not one of your inventions. I'm broken. Part of me is missing, and you can't fix me with copper wires or a piece of string. For a high-born lady of fine breeding, Valoria's sigh is a lot like a growl. She strips off my quilt and grabs me by the shoulders.
Your mother brought you into this world as a whole person,
the princess huffs, pulling so hard that I slide to the edge of the bed.
And last I checked, you still are one, no matter what or who you've lost. Now get,
she jerks on my arms.
Up!
I cling to the bed, and Valoria stumbles backward alone.
Fine,
she straightens, smoothing her rose-patterned gown.
You win today, but I'm coming back, same time tomorrow, and I'll bring extra muscle if need be.
By Vaya's grace, why?
Because that's what friends do.
She turns on her heel and strides from the room. Once she slams the door, I drain a vial of potion in a huge gulp. I don't know what the princess expected. I can't be anything to anyone right now, which she'd know if she'd bothered to listen to me. I hurl the empty potion vial at the wall and watch it shatter. Chapter 11. The bells on the apothecary door jingle merrily, making my head throb as I step inside. Worse than the noise is the smell, which is somewhere between a musty attic and a healer's closet full of pungent herbs. Mysterious, spicy fumes leak from spilled bottles. I stride to the back counter, shoving my shaking hands in my pockets as I walk. It's been 6 hours since my last calming potion. 6 hours since I drank the blue liquid that keeps me floating just a little outside myself. Outside the worst of the pain. The potion that banishes the thoughts that would destroy me, of blood and sightless creatures, of rotting flesh and a soul-shattering scream. Daniel says it's time to stop abusing the potion or risk terrible side effects. But he doesn't understand that I need this to survive, to keep seeing my silent visions of Evander. All I have left of him. And if Daniel won't fetch the potion for me anymore, I'll just buy it myself. Vaya knows I've got enough gold to afford what I need, between my savings and what Evander left sitting in Grenweir Treasury under my name. Maybe he did see this coming, or something like it after all. My insides twist into hundreds of tiny knots when I think of using Evander's coins to buy a calming potion that makes me numb. Makes me see his phantom so I won't forget his face. But he'll never know, so I guess it's not really hurting anyone. As I wait for the apothecary or one of his assistants to appear, I drum my fingers on the long counter and my hand comes away caked in dust. The wall behind the counter is stacked to the ceiling with glass jars, and one in the middle is full of the bitter apple liquid I badly need. I study the waist-high counter, trying to decide whether I can jump it, when a soft voice gasps, "Odessa!" A jolt runs through me. I straighten and glance at the woman who's appeared behind the counter. Her usually beautiful features pinched in a frown.
What are you doing here?
Lyda Crowther demands, leaning against the other side of the counter so we're nose to nose. At almost the same time, I blurt, "You shouldn't be here." Lyda's always worked a few days a week at the city apothecary. She doesn't have a keen eye for mixing potions. Hers are blue, of course, not brown. But she says she likes working much better than sitting in the manor all day arranging tea parties. And the head apothecary was in need of someone to manage the front of the shop. But Lyda shouldn't be here today. Not with Evander so recently laid in the ground.
Odessa.
Lyda's voice is low and urgent. She grips my upper arm, her fingernails pricking my skin beneath my thin shirt.
Are you all right?
Blinking, I realize I'm leaning against the counter with a hand pressed to my forehead. I'm a little dizzy, I confess as I take in Lyda's appearance. But I'll be fine. The more important question is, how are you? Lyda purses her lips, like she's not sure how to answer. There are no smudges under her eyes, and her pale skin is flawless as ever. Her stiff, high-collared sapphire dress is neat and unwrinkled, and her hands are perfectly manicured. But I know as well as anyone that we all wear scars others can't see.
I'm managing, Lyda says at last. Elabeth's taking some time off from her duties at the kennels to help me sort through all of Evander's things.
We'll be donating them to the Convent of Death. She draws a heavy breath. And Merity's on her way home as well. Though I wish it was under happier.
You're giving away Evander's belongings? All of them?
My face warms, and heat creeps up the back of my neck. Lyda reaches out to smooth my hair, and I pull away. She lowers her hand, frowning again.
I've been through this before, remember?
Her voice is just above a whisper, like she can't bear to hear the words coming from her own mouth.
With my husband. And for me, the best way to move on is to purge the manor of reminders of the deceased.
The deceased?
I repeat the words through numb lips.
Did you ever bother asking Evander what he wanted you to do with all his things if he died?
My vision grows hazy, as though light is standing behind a cloud of smoke. But I continue.
Or how about asking me? He was mine, and no one's asked me what I thought he wanted.
Silence settles over us as we lock eyes, the perfumed air too thick to carry sound. Lyda's eyes are round with shock or revulsion or something else I can't name. I struggle for what feels like hours to get my tongue and throat working again.
I mean,
I finally manage in a steady enough voice. He was my partner, and I loved him.
He was going to tell you. We were going to move to the palace together.
I pause to wipe the sweat beating on my forehead.
Right after we killed the Shade, he was going to tell you.
I already knew,
Lyda says slowly. She glances down at her hands, making it impossible to read her expression.
I've known for a year or so. Love is difficult to disguise.
You knew?
I repeat flatly.
You knew we were in love, but you reminded Van all the time that he couldn't marry a necromancer with your blessing? Why?
Swallowing hard, I taste the sour beginnings of anger. The realest, strongest thing I've felt in days.
I thought it would make you both give up the job,
Lyda whispers, still not meeting my eyes.
Tears spill onto her cheeks.
I thought, if you wanted each other badly enough, more than you wanted the job,
You'd give it up. And then you'd both live long, happy lives. I was trying to save you. At last, she looks up, her eyes gleaming. If you keep playing with death, you'll end up just like him. Some of her sadness gives way to anger. Is that what you want? Bristling, I lean toward her, gripping the counter. I have a score to settle with a Vander's killer. And unlike you, I don't run from a fight.
Is everything all right out there?
A dry voice calls. There's a rustling from deep within the shop's back room, and slowly, a shrouded figure emerges. Lyda and I carefully avoid each other's eyes as the apothecary joins the Baroness at the counter.
Good afternoon, Sparrow,
the apothecary rasps. A faint whiff of mint and rosemary wafts under my nose. No doubt because the apothecary has stuffed fresh bundles of herbs under his shroud. Most of the dead prefer not to stink like the corpses they are, and that's fine by me.
What can we get you today?
I need another month's worth of your strongest calming tonic. I nod to the jar of liquid glittering a cobalt promise, then shrug and pretend to look annoyed. Healer's orders.
Are you sure, Sparrow?
The apothecary rests a gloved hand lightly on my forearm, making me flinch.
That's a powerful tonic. I've never heard of anyone taking it for so long without becoming dependent upon it. The side effects can be rather nasty for days after a dose. Shaking fits, dizzy spells, even hallucinations.
Staring into his masked face, my thoughts begin to wander. I know I can't bring Evander back. But if I could, would it be what was best for him? For us? Would I ever be satisfied with staring into a mask instead of Evander's stunning eyes? Would we be able to embrace? Or would I be too repulsed by the thought of rotting skin and the stench of a corpse rising from his shroud? Surely, it would all be worth it to have him at my side again, whether I could see him or not. To hear his jokes and keep his company. But even if I had to kill him to stop him from becoming a shade? Suddenly, a little of my anger at Lyda fades. She's been through this before. Her husband became a shade, and she had to slay him. Of course she doesn't want to be constantly reminded of the son she lost. To pick up a shirt that still faintly smells of Evander, of sandalwood and fresh-cut grass. And wonder, like I am, if things could have been different this time somehow. Of course she'd want to get rid of his belongings. As I cast an apologetic glance at the Baroness, I notice the apothecary is waiting for my reply. I imagine him giving me a questioning look behind his mask and cross my arms, making it clear I'm not going anywhere until I get what I came for. I'm certain it's what I need, I say at last. She's a grown woman, Lyda tells the apothecary. If you won't pour it for her, I will. She catches my nod of thanks, and her lips twitch the slightest bit. The look she gives me is almost maternal, taking me back several years. This must be her way of saying she's sorry, hopefully for more than just today. I hope it's for the years of standing between me and Evander, when it all turned out to be for nothing. The apothecary heaves a rattling sigh and gathers several empty vials from under the counter, thrusting them at the Baroness.
Very well, Lyda. I'll leave you to finish up here.
With a quick bow to me, he trudges toward the back room, his black shroud trailing on the floor behind him like an elongated shadow. Lyda doesn't say a word as she fills the vials from the big glass jar. The sound of the potion sloshing in the vial helps loosen the knots in my shoulders and stomach. I curl and uncurl my fingers and gaze around the shop, desperate to occupy the little moments until the potion's burning through my veins and I'm back in control. I'm trying to name the different herbs hanging in dried bunches overhead, when a strange tingling at the back of my neck makes me whirl around. There, blocking the shop's only exit, is a shade as huge and hideous as the one that killed Evander. It must be the same one, because there's a bony stump where its arm once was. I don't know how it even fit through the narrow door, or what the blazes compelled it to come out of the Deadlands. It trains its dark eye sockets on me as it opens its yawning mouth wide, and I fumble for my sword. "Lyda, get back!" I shout. She's still behind the counter, but that's hardly a barrier to a shade. At last, I brandish my blade, daring the monster to come one step closer. "You ready to lose the other arm?" I snarl. The shade creeps toward me, then scuttles back against the door, its skeletal fingers dragging the ground, mocking me. It knows it can outrun me. I charge it. I may not have a fire potion at the ready, but if I'm lucky, I can at least do some damage. "Sparrow!" Lyda gasps. Her voice is high and harsh in my ear. She's right beside me, the foolish woman, which means she left the counter and headed right toward the danger. "What's gotten into you?" I break my stare with the shade for just a moment to gape at her. Her eyes are wide and wild. When I glance back at the shade, it's gone. I lower my sword, heat rushing to my face as Lyda checks me for fever. There wasn't anything in here with us just now? Lyda grips my shoulders, forcing me to look her in the eye. "Odessa, what did you see?" I wave her and her concerns away, though I'd be lying if I said what just happened didn't get under my skin. I've got to keep it together long enough to kill the monster that took Evander. I'll be no use to anyone if I can't tell the real monsters from the ones in my head. And I'm far from doing a good job of holding on to my sanity. Someone knocks on the door of my palace room, a sharp and purposeful sound. I bury my head in my pillow to muffle it. The doorknob rattles, more knocking follows, and a smooth male voice says, "Special delivery from Prince Hadrian Wilding for one Odessa of Grenwyr." I shake my head at the familiar voice. Sitting up, I call, "I know it's you, Highness." "It's Hadrian, as I've told you countless times." The smile in his voice is unmistakable as he adds, "And if you know it's me, why aren't you opening the door, Sparrow?" I'm pretty sure the wardrobe in the corner of my room is judging me as I try to smooth my rumpled uniform. I hurry to unlock the door, only to be greeted by, "That's a lot of flowers, Hadrian. Surely they aren't all for me." The bouquet, no doubt plucked fresh from the palace greenhouse, white carnations for endearment, cheerful yellow acacia for friendship, and, unsurprisingly, lilac for new affections, tickles my nose as I peer around the blossoms for a glimpse of the smiling prince. "They are, but never mind them." He lowers the bouquet. "Read the invitation they come with. It's far more important." As his gaze sweeps over my face, Whatever he sees there steals the sunshine from his deep brown eyes.
Clearing his throat,
he adds in a far more solemn tone, "My birthday festival is tonight. I came to invite you in person." His fingers touch my cheek for the briefest moment, hummingbird light, and to see how you're holding up.
I blink and look away, lost for words.
When I raise my eyes again, Shadow Evander, often my only companion these days, stands behind the prince, pretending to kick Hadrian in the rear to make me laugh. I quickly bite my lip, resisting the urge to grin.
"Sparrow, do you need to sit? Can I..."
"Here." Hadrian sweeps into the room, pulling out a chair and gently guiding me into it.
"Do you need anything?"
he asks, even as I shake my head.
"Water, perhaps?"
Heat creeps back into my face as I remember yesterday's disastrous visit to the apothecary. The potion made a fool out of me, and it's threatening to do so again now. But I need it to keep the pain away. At this rate, I'm destined to become a public laughingstock. I'm fine. I realize my sweaty palm is soaking the invitation he handed me. And I pull the creamy piece of parchment from its envelope. It smells clean, like sage, like Hadrian. The scent clears my head a little.
"If you're not feeling up to a party, I'll understand," Hadrian says, kneeling by my chair.
"Just say the word, and we can pretend this invitation never found its way here. There'll be other parties. Other invitations I can deliver in person." I press my lips together, lost for words. I'm only staying at the palace until I can keep my head clear long enough to know the real shade when I see it, so I can be sure I've killed Evander's murderer. And once the shade is dead, I assume I will be too. I don't know how to tell Hadrian that I'll be wherever the real Evander is soon. "I'll be there," I blurt, surprising myself as much as Hadrian.
"Are you certain?"
He tilts his head. And when he meets my eyes, my breath catches in my throat. It might just be another hallucination, but the look he gives me reminds me of one Evander and I used to share when we were alone.
It would mean a lot to me.
Behind him, Shadow Evander pretends to retch. "Of course, it's..." I lower my eyes to the invitation to avoid his earnest gaze. "Perfect timing." Hadrian coughs, as though he doesn't believe that for a moment. But I rush on. "I needed an excuse to wear my favorite party dress again, and you've delivered it." If he recognizes the false cheer in my voice, he makes no sign of it. He climbs to his feet, just to give me a deep bow. Shadow Evander flashes me a look of betrayal. I know he's not real, but he looks it. And my stomach aches as I feel like I've hurt him all over again.
"I've been losing sleep every night since it happened,"
Hadrian says softly, jarring me back to reality.
"I lie awake thinking of Master Crowther, and how we lost him far too soon. And Master Nicanor, too. I urged His Majesty to assign extra guards to patrol these halls and keep the rest of you safe, though they certainly didn't prove their worth against the last shade they met."
Admiration glints in his dark eyes as he adds, "You took care of that brilliantly on your own." I don't know what to say to that. I never know what to say to Hadrian. I settle on,
I better bathe and change if I'm attending a party in a few hours. Unless you want me to show up in this.
You look perfect in everything.
The prince's smile returns as I gesture at my tired black uniform.
My only birthday wish is to see your face tonight.
I nod, once again unable to form words as my mind races.
See you soon, sweet sparrow,
Hadrian calls as he closes the door on his way out. Shadow Evander aims a kick at the door in response.
I need you, and you're not here, I whisper as he flickers and disappears beneath my bleary gaze.
I miss you. We all miss you.
I think of Jax with a guilty pang. Shadow Evander's look of betrayal would be far worse if he ever appeared in Jax's darkened room to find us in the bed we now share out of desperation.
I love you, and I'm sorry.
Tonight, I'll put on the blue silk dress that drove Evander mad when we were in public, and all he could do was hold my hand. And I'll dance and drink and fake a smile for everyone who smiles at me. Tonight, I'm going to live one last time. Chapter 12. A pounding on my door nearly causes me to drop my latest dose of potion.
Sparrow, let's go! Jax calls. I don't want to miss the first batch of party food! We'll be lucky if the dead leave us scraps!
I swallow the contents of the vial in one huge gulp, then try to tug my dress up to cover more of my chest, even though I know it's pointless. I shake my dark brown waves loose from the butterfly pin holding them up, and let my hair fall over my shoulders. I grab a second vial from my stash and splash more blue liquid down my throat. I want to make sure Evander is within reach tonight. As if reading my thoughts, he appears from behind my wardrobe, smiling appraisingly at my dress. When I open the door to the hall, Jax is standing off to one side, staring at a painting of King Wilding in his shroud. If not for the crown, it could be a portrait of any of the dead. As usual, Jax has put on his finest for the royal celebration. Black silk robes, his only adornments a longsword and a golden scabbard, and his master necromancer's sapphire pin. I prop a hand on my hip.
What are you doing out here anyway?
I assumed I'd see him at the party, hovering near the banquet tables or trying to outdrink the dead. Jax's copper skin gleams in the torchlight of the hall as he turns to me, his eyes uncertain.
I thought we'd go together, he shrugs. If you'd rather go alone, I'll give you 5 minutes head start.
He points to the left, down the hallway.
The party's that way.
This isn't...
I pause and lick my lips, struggling for words. I need Jax in a way I've never needed anyone before. But he can't fill Evander's place at my side.
This isn't like that. We're not like that.
Jax scowls.
Like what? You mean we're not friends anymore?
I shake my head, relieved, and twine my arm around his.
Of course we are.
Lead the way.
The palace courtyard looks much as it did on the night of the Festival of Cloud. Only there are no nuns in charcoal gray habits, or any roaring bonfires. Instead, glass jars filled with water and tiny candles perched on every ledge overhead give the impression of floating lights.
There's a large space for dancing. And the musicians who aren't currently performing roam among the crowd,
their chests thrown out to show off the gleaming silver heart pins bestowed upon them by King Wilding, eating their fill before they take the stage. Gathered around a magnificent display of tarts, the queen and her ladies-in-waiting are deep in conversation. The gold bangles and other gems on their shrouded figures chime softly with each gesture. The air around them thick with citrus and spice, as though they've all doused themselves in bergamot perfume. There's no sign of King Wilding yet. He's surely busy writing out a long, rambling speech about Hadrian's accomplishments, which he'll give before he cuts the cake. Honey and lavender, the same as it's been the last 7 years I've attended the royal birthday parties. Jax makes a beeline for the banquet tables, leaving me adrift in a sea of flowing silks and bodies warm and cold. "Thanks, friend," I mutter after him. A servant bearing a large and heavy-looking silver tray passes by, and I swipe a glass of pale liquid and sniff it. Honeysuckle wine, I think. But there's only one way to be sure. 2 glasses of sweet wine later, I'm no longer bothered that everyone seems to be sneaking curious glances at me instead of talking to me or asking how I've been. I'm swaying slightly to the lively tunes of the evening's main band. I'm singing along, making up my own lyrics. I'm laughing as Jax bumps into Princess Valoria, knocking her glasses into a bowl of cranberry sauce, and then frantically trying to clean them on his tunic. The redness of the sauce is nothing compared to the fire in Valoria's cheeks as she snatches her glasses back and adjusts them, stealing glances at Jax after putting them back on. I don't have any time to dwell on what those glances mean, or how I feel about it, because someone shouts my name as I reach for my 3rd or 4th glass of wine from a tray that's moving alarmingly fast. "I've been looking everywhere for you," Prince Hadrian says as he squeezes between 2 dancing couples to reach me. "And I'm not the only one." The prince's messy blonde hair seems paler than usual, especially where the longest strands brush the shoulders of his midnight blue tunic. He scans the crowd around us before focusing the full intensity of his gaze on me and spreads his hands in a helpless gesture. "I swear she was just over by the cake, talking to Mother." I have no idea what he's talking about. "Valoria?" I guess, cringing at the way I slurred the name. I've had 3 glasses of wine before, but maybe it's not mixing well with the calming potion. "No, my sister is always easy to pick out of a crowd," Hadrian smiles, the kind that lights his eyes from within, the kind he always gives to me in particular. "I'm afraid I don't know the young woman's name." He runs a hand through his hair, ruffling it even though the breeze was already doing that for him. Maybe he knows how perfectly imperfect he looks, with pale strands falling across his eyes. "I've never seen her before, which is strange because she seemed to be about our age. But she's very insistent on speaking with you." I run through a list of names in my head, though it pounds with the beginnings of a headache. Master Simbri? No. Hadrian knows her. Elabeth? But Hadrian knows her, too. One of Casimira's crew, perhaps? "Here, join me." Hadrian presses a glass of dark elderflower wine into my hands, chasing away the mystery of who would be asking for me tonight. "A little something to raise our spirits in these troubled times." His hands are on my waist, keeping me steady. I hadn't realized how much I was swaying. I clink my glass against his and drain it quickly, drowning my thoughts of how Evander would have snarled to see Hadrian holding me like this. Happy birthday, Highness. I lift my glass again, but it's nearly empty. A lone drop splashes my cheek.
Hadrian, he corrects me again.
He pulls a white handkerchief from the pocket of his leather trousers and dabs my cheek dry.
And if you really want to make it a happy one, you'll...
Yes? My heart's hammering a staccato beat, at odds with the gentle waltz the fiddlers have just begun to play.
I'd love to dance with you, Hadrian.
The prince blinks, closes his open mouth, and takes my hands.
I'm not sure how we wind up in the middle of the dance floor, or how I let Hadrian pull me so close that I'm forced to gaze deep into his eyes.
They're the darkest brown I've ever seen. Like Evander's, were the darkest blue. I want to ask him if he's ever seen his sister's inventions, or if he creates things in secret, too. But I've never asked for secrets from a prince, and if I move my lips too much just now, they might catch on Hadrian's, and that would create a whole new mess I'm in no state to clean up.
How have you been, Sparrow?
Hadrian whispers, his mouth near my ear. Now I can see the many stares I expected. Even the dead have turned their masked faces our way, and their silence is palpable, leaving only the music. No different than I was when you asked this afternoon in my chamber, I answer at last. Hadrian pushes me away so I can twirl in time with the chorus, then pulls me in with a force that makes my head spin. You're the only one who's asked lately, though. I try to take a deep breath, but it's not easy with the prince's arms hugging my waist like the corsets the noble women wear. Thank you for caring. Hadrian shakes his head, looking solemn.
You don't have to thank me for that.
I care for every living person in this rich and beautiful land, Sparrow.
I twirl away from him again, meeting his eyes from the distance created by our outstretched arms. His face is the only thing I see clearly amidst a swirl of colors and shapes.
You say my name a lot.
He pulls me back to his arms, stumbling a bit on the impact of our collision. Quickly recovering his footing, he flashes a dazzling grin.
Maybe that's because I like the sound of it.
We dance for a few more minutes until someone, Hadrian, I think, presses another glass of wine into my hands. I'm losing track of how much I've had, and my stomach is churning. But the wine warms me all over, and the fiddler's music sings through my blood. This is it. Living. If only Evander were here to do it all with me. I blink back the sudden tears pricking my eyes and look around for another servant bearing wine. Hadrian's hands are on my waist again. Now they're cupping my face, pulling me in for a kiss, and I clumsily take a step back. But before I can object to his apparent habit of kissing people without their permission, Hadrian's face melts away, replaced by Jax's in a single, confusing blink. The sight makes me shiver.
Is that really you?
I demand, remembering the potion's tricks even through the haze I'm in.
You've either had too much to drink or not enough.
Jax's gruff voice and rough but steady hands assure me it's him.
So the question is, do you need me to fetch you some water or something stronger?
I rest my head on his chest, inhaling the now familiar scent of his sweat. This is my last night before I enter the Deadlands. My last night to feel truly alive.
I can't stop now and head inside when the moon is paper white and young and full. Neither, I say finally.